would remain quite dead, and Aulën would be safe from him. That thought caught Shona off guard, and had her looking askance as Breyth completed his approach, for it surprised her to admit to herself how much she actually cared for her niece. She wanted to protect Aulën, and she knew that the spirited lass wasn't ready for marriage to any man, and particularly not to this one. Yes, if Breyth pressed her, she meant to kill him. And then it would be at least another year before the tribe selected a new husband to take Aulën. The young warrior stood before her, his expression full of confidence, of bravado, but also with trepidation. How often the mixture of those two emotions could be seen together, Shona thought, but only if one knew how to see them.
"Why do you smile, hag?" Breyth asked. "Should I not smile upon seeing such a strong, young lad?" she asked, counting on his ego to prevent him from seeing through the sarcasm, though she did put a bit of extra emphasis on young. Not that the self-absorbed Breyth noticed. The warrior shook his head.
"I would ask something of you," he said.
Shona waited a long moment for the question, before recognizing that the man was waiting for her permission. The woman crinkled her face, taken off guard at his unexpected politesse.
"Do tell," she said, trying to convey some measure of wisdom and experience in her tone, to remind the fierce young warrior that his deference was wise and had been earned.
"If I have an answer, I'll give it. About my bride."
Again that long, pregnant pause. And Shona was unused to such respect from a man.
"What about her?" "There are some who say she spends a lot of time with the Umas."
Again, Shona noted, a statement, not a question.
"She does. This troubles many."
Shona tried to keep the exasperation off her face. Was he meaning to actually ask her a question, she wondered, and so she asked one of her own.
"Does it trouble Breyth? Look about you. You live on a mountain of gossip and unearned certitude. Everything troubles many."
Breyth grew suddenly animated, his face locking into a sneer.
"If Aulën lies with the slaves, she is impure and unfit to marry."
Shona stifled a laugh, but couldn't resist a bit of a snort, at least.
"She does not lie with the slaves."
The young man stared hard at her, and she snorted again at the preposterousness of his accusation.
"She doesn't even know fully what it is to be a woman, foolish Breyth. Aulën has no desire, and would not sate it with any of the Umas in any case. She is free of mind and full of curiousness, but she is not an animal."
A wave of relief washed over the young warrior, visibly so.
"Good," he snapped, nodding,
and turned to walk away. Among the Úsgar, the women knew well to let a man have the last word, and so Breyth's turn should have been the end of the discussion, but Breyth had shown her deference, respect even, and Shona's curiosity got the best of her, and she couldn't resist.
"What does Breyth think of his intended bride?" she asked.
He turned back to her, clearly caught by surprise.
"You've barely met her," Shona pressed, "but seems you've heard rumors of her ways. So, you've clearly been looking and listening, young Breyth. So tell me, what thoughts have you of Aulën?"
Breyth seemed pensive, unsure even, and he didn't respond for many heartbeats. He was out of sorts, Shona realized, particularly given his reputation. Was she wrong about him? Were the rumors of his debauchery and disrespect overblown?
"They say she is willful," Breyth finally answered. "Disobedient, even."
In her reflexive desire to protect her niece, Shona considered lying to him. Before she began to respond, though, she decided that the truth might prove to be Aulën's best defense here, particularly if it unnerved this preening bull and made him a bit less sure of himself.
"Willful and disobedient," she answered. "Aye. Owlin's both. And clever and quick when she wants to be."
"Wants? It's not a woman's place to want," Braith replied,
recovering a bit of his bravado. And indeed, Shona saw a cloud of danger flash across his undeniably handsome and angular face, reminding her of all the whispers.
Shona nodded and bowed. "You've your job."
"I've taught Owlin as much on her place, but the lessons have not taken root of yet."
Braith narrowed his dark eyes, and it occurred to Shona that her compliance might have given him too much confidence here.
"Then teach her better," he said. "By your words or my hand, she'll know her place when she's my bride."
"She's not the first,"
Shona started to argue, but the boy's wicked smile coming back at her forced her to change tactics.
"Many the young woman have I taught," she replied,
letting the tiniest bit of an edge creep into her voice.
"I know my part."
"Yet she has not learned," Braith said.
"The child is immune to any lesson she does not wish to learn,"
Shona said with exaggerated exasperation, trying to inject a little levity. Braith didn't take it that way, though.
"From you, perhaps. But hear me, old witch. If Olin's not to learn Macantus from you, she'll learn it from me."
Shona winced at the mere mention of the word. Macantus was the demand of complete submission from a woman, the tradition that forced from them meekness, the sacred and unbending word of the god Uskar that man should rule and woman should serve, the very core of Uskar law that would allow Te Orlig to throw Shona into Kresa Dydd, if he so chose. Macantus, the tradition that had sent Shona's sister Elara flying to her death.
"I'll be glad to finish Owlin's lessons," Braith ended, his light eyes sparkling, his voice flat, inflection wholly passive.
He would, matter-of-factly, beat the spirit out of Owlin, and Shona understood then that Braith would enjoy every moment of it. A chill ran down Shona's spine, and she warmed it only by firming up her resolve to teach Owlin the truth of what it was to be Uskar, what it was to be an Uskar woman. She had to break the spirited lass, or Braith would destroy everything about Owlin that made her a daughter worthy of Elara. Again, Shona was surprised to learn how much she cared. When Braith turned once more and started away, a shaken Shona did not stop him. By the time Shona returned to her tent, Owlin had washed, dressed, eaten her breakfast, and completed her chores. Owlin was often energetic in the morning, but the level of this day's ambition surely surprised her teacher. Shona was more surprised still to find Owlin greeting her with a smile. She met that smile with an openly skeptical look, but that didn't seem to diminish the mood of the beaming woman. Already Owlin had heard the news, Shona realized. For years the young woman had been begging for more training with the magic of Uskar, and she knew it was now coming.
"Whisper has put you with the Umas many times," Shona said, with a rather nasty edge. "With the stupid one."
Owlin rocked back on her heels, her smile vanishing in a gasp, obviously taken aback by the bluntness of the accusation. It was true enough. Owlin always did her foraging near the slave quarters, and spent many hours in the company of Badlan, who was nearing his 15th birthday, and becoming quite the strong and tall young man. The slavers worked him hard, and his hard muscles showed it.
"Then it's true.
My tasks take me near—" Owlin started to reply, but Shona wasn't listening.
"Why is that one even still alive?"
she asked, more to herself than Owlin.
Were he Uskar, he'd be raiding and hunting this very year. She snorted derisively. The whispers circle you, girl, she warned.
From who? Aulan asked, straightening her shoulders defiantly.
The man who'll take you for his wife, for one, the older witch replied. Shona noted the sour look that crossed Aulan's face at the mention of Braith, and that expression almost broke the older woman. She was glad of Aulan's obvious distrust of the man, and even more obvious distaste of the whole arrangement, but she couldn't let anyone, particularly Aulan, know that she was glad of it, especially not with Modgarad, the trial of the Crystal Caverns, so near at hand. Aulan shuffled from foot to foot nervously, and Shona thought her properly humbled.
The man who will beat you until you bleed, the old witch added, but then heaved a sigh, letting it all go.
Set, she said. We've much to do.
Aulan stared at her for just a few moments longer, then moved for her chair.
Baskets or blankets?
The young woman asked, making no attempt to hide her sarcasm.
No,
Shona replied. Slowly, Shona brought forth her hand and opened her fingers to reveal three small crystals sitting in her open palm.
Crystals. Today, the lesson is Uskar.
Aulan's black eyes sparkled, and her beaming smile returned tenfold as she stared at the tantalizing items, reflecting a pinkish hue in one crystal, grey in another, and the clearest of the three, shining magnificently in a slanting morning sunbeam. The deep, inky darkness of several small flakes stood in stark contrast to the brilliance in that one, for it was thick with wedstones. Shona knew she held Aulan wrapped.
You know these? She asked,
though of course she knew the answer. Still, she wanted to judge how fully Aulan understood the potential revealed before her in this moment. In truth, Aulan should not have known much, but Shona suspected differently. The girl was too observant and clever. Aulan had studied carefully the ceremony when the weapons had been blessed, and had witnessed the levitational powers of the Malachite at the cliff, of course. Aulan nodded eagerly, and the sparkle in her dark eyes gave it all away.
The children of the god,
Aulan whispered reverently.
Magic.
The source of magic?
Shona asked, and Aulan wagged her head eagerly in the affirmative.
No.
Shona corrected, and that shocked Aulan out of her seeming trance, her eyes lifting to regard the surprising Shona.
These are Uskar's instruments, but not the source of the song, Shona explained. She who holds the crystal is the source.
Here, she brought her hand to her chest, to her heart. Aulan did the same, touching a hand to her center. But where Shona expected a look of intrigue and wonder, she saw instead the slightest cloud pass across Aulan's eyes. The darkness passed, and Shona did not ask what it was about. Not now. Not with the trial looming.
All still in body and mind, Shona said, knowing that the words would confuse the girl.
That was the whole point, however. The very first and most important lesson of Uskar. Shona brought her full attention to the crystals in her hand, to the wedstone-flecked clear crystal. She let her center flow out from her, into the crystal, and through it. She focused her energy, and after a few moments, her spirit stepped out from her physical form. The world looked different here, from outside her body. Everything in the room became washed out, grey, distant. No novice to this strange out-of-body experience, Shona was not disoriented. But when she looked at the girl sitting before her, the older witch was indeed startled.
While firewalking, as the coven called it, creatures observed took on a glow, an aura,
with humans shining most brightly.
Everyone's aura appeared different, but slightly so, in a way Shona found difficult to put into words, much like describing the tiny variations in people's faces. She could explain the broad strokes of an aura, but that was never sufficient to properly paint the picture, for all the auras looked more similar than different, and yet, to a trained eye, all were indeed distinct.
But Aulan's aura was something else entirely. The only word Shona could think of was bright, but that hardly did the girl's glow justice. Aulan was veritably glowing, and not in a manner that bespoke simple magical potential, as one might see when peering in such a way at the Uskar Regin, though surely a similar potential was apparent with this girl. Such an aura as that would show the fiery glow of a ruby, or the arc of lightning, or some other expression of magical might. However, with Aulan, Shona saw most of all the aura of the Wedstone itself. But only for a moment, for then came a greater surprise, when Aulan's aura shimmered like grey clouds speeding beneath a brilliant rainbow. Green hues, like the flakes of the levitation stone, perhaps the most important crystal of all to people who ran the treacherous ways of Furuk's Buer, grounded that rainbow on both ends. Shona was glad that she was out of her body, that the girl could not see a physical expression at that moment, for her physical face would not reflect her shock, or indeed her sudden admiration for this willful child, or the flash of sorrow and recognition that surely would have registered. For only once had Shona witnessed an aura somewhat resembling this, though not nearly as vivid and defined as Aulan's, and the memory threw her back to her first student, her much younger sibling, Elara. The witch quickly fought herself past the swirl of emotions. The aura reading was important, of course, but it was not the primary task before Shona right now. She focused her thoughts and her spirit like a spear, and dived into the mind and soul of the glowing child. A long while later, Shona's spirit fought her way out of Aelin's corporeal form, and came back to her own body with a shocking return of her physical sensibilities. She took a quick inventory of her senses, wiggled her fingers and toes to ensure that she had returned to her corporeal form whole, then took a deep breath. For to possess the body of another was not without grave risk, and was rarely attempted by any of the Uskar witches, and never done so unless in urgent circumstance. This was an urgent circumstance. Shona looked down at Aulan, lying on the floor before her, thoroughly drained. Shona, too, was exhausted, and it took all of her willpower not to fall down on the floor beside Aulan, and let herself melt into a deep slumber. She had expected some weariness, but nothing like this. Spiritually possessing another person was always trying, but if that person wasn't versed in the magic of Uskar, she couldn't typically put up much a struggle, caught off guard by an experience so out of the ordinary that it could not be anticipated. But Aelin had battled mightily against the intrusion, and this young woman, this mere girl, had nearly won that struggle. At one point, Shona had feared that Aulan would fully expel Shona, and spiritually exit as well, to chase Shona back to her own body. The witch thought back to her aura reading on Aulan, and how impressed she had been to find such strength and affinity to magic in the girl's glow, so much like her young sister, Elara. She was doubly impressed now. Aulan stirred before her, not as strained as Shona had believed, perhaps. The witch made a note to push aside her admiration, and not let on to feeling here, thinking that Aulan was willful enough without having her pride prodded so. Aulan groaned and went up on her elbows, shaking her head groggily and seeming lost, disoriented. Shona understood, surely. Spiritual possession was the most disconcerting magic any Uskar witch had ever known, no matter how many times one performed it. Shona took a deep breath, sorting the words she would use to explain it all to Aulan, and why she felt she had to perpetrate such a violation. Those words fell away, though, when Aulan spun about suddenly into a sitting position, facing Shona, the girl's black eyes sparkling and bright.
"Do it again,"
a breathless Aulan implored her.
That was amazing.
Shona blinked repeatedly, unable to decipher and accept the reaction.
Did...
she started and stopped.
Did you understand what...
At first, you put the fear in me,
Aulan interrupted. I didn't understand, but after a heartbeat it came clear that you were teaching me. Shona cocked her head to the side, unsure. Indeed, the Wedstone could be used to aid in teaching a novice witch the ways of the crystal magic, but that had not been Shona's intention with this possession of young Aulan. And such a dramatic lesson wouldn't be done at all unless and until Aulan had become a full member of the coven. Shona had only taken the action this day to reveal to Aulan some measure of the dark side of magical power, to gird her against the spiritual assault she would certainly find when she ventured into the crystal caves.
Yes, yes, of course,
Shona lied, in the hopes of extracting what Aulan might have learned during this unintentional lesson.
And was I successful, child?
A beaming Aulan thrust out her hand.
Oh, I...
The witch hesitated, trying to gauge if it was really possible that this girl... No, this young woman had actually pulled some valuable insight out of that possession exercise. The mere thought of that possibility frightened Shona as much as it excited her. She spent a long while just studying Aulan then, considering her options and the possible ramifications of anything she might do. Surely she would not give Aulan a crystal thick with wedstone. Would Aulan then possess her, perhaps even ejecting her from her own mortal coil? Using the magic of Uskar required both strength and discipline. Aulan had the first. Shona shuddered as she remembered yet again the brightness of Aulan's magical aura. But the discipline. Shona started to shake her head in denial, thinking it best to not give the young woman any crystals at all. But before Aulan's smile could even disappear, the witch reconsidered. She sorted the crystals in her pocket and found the one with the least destructive potential. One flecked bright green, the stone known as malachite.
"Show me what you have learned,"
she said, handing it to Aulan. Aulan fumbled with it for a bit, to no effect.
"Not the crystal,"
Shona scolded, and pointed to her own heart.
"Concentrate your thoughts on your own life energy, on the center of your being. Find that power, and bring it forth through the..."
She stopped, realizing that Aulan wasn't even pretending to listen, and was instead purely focused on the crystal that she turned about in her hands. Shona shook her head and sighed loudly. The girl lacked discipline, lacked even the basic manners to pretend she was listening. But suddenly, Shona recognized even more profoundly that Aulan had power. For everything in the room began to shake, trembling, a cup overturning by the water basin. It hit the ground and bounced, but did not go back down, but rather began to float. The water basin, too, lifted off the ground. The straw of the bed, and the bed, both beds. Everything in the tent began to rise, and Shona began to float. The witch grabbed a tent pole to steady herself.
"Aulan,"
she said with concern.
"Child,"
she added, when there came no reaction. The tent walls began to rise. The pole in Shona's hand trembled as if it would pull out of the ground.
"Aulan!" Shona yelled. "Child, stop!"
But, wearing an expression of pure ecstasy, Aulan did not react, did not even seem to hear her. Shona heard a commotion outside. Under the rising tent side, she saw the running feet of a man, a large man wearing heavy boots. The witch panicked. She could not let a man see this spectacle of an uninitiated child enacting such magic.
She pushed off the pole and threw herself at Aulan, grabbing for the young woman's hand. The tent flap flew open, but at just that instant, the levitation field dropped, everything, Shona included, tumbling to the floor. Aulan opened her eyes wide, but Shona kept enough of her wits about her to grab harder at the crystal and tug it from Aulan's hand.
"What are you about, witch?"
Tay Orlig demanded from the doorway. Shona straightened herself and brushed some of the dirt away, trying to regain a measure of composure and dignity.
"I am showing the young woman what power looks like," Shona replied,
trying hard to appear in control. She was wise enough to put a bit of deference in her tone as well, though, not wanting to give Tayalig yet another reason to wish her harm. Out of the corner of her eye, she noted a curious look cross Aulan's face, as the young woman moved as if to speak. She flashed Aulan a chilling glare, warning her to silence. Somehow, surprisingly, the insolent Aulan got the message and shut her mouth.
"You are supposed to be preparing the girl," Tay Orlick scolded. "Not destroying the encampment."
"Destroying?" Shona mouthed silently, and Tay Orlick moved aside, but still held the tent flap aloft. Shona's jaw dropped open. Several people outside stood staring at the tent in shock. Spears and tools lay strewn about the ground, and logs, some of them still burning, had been lifted and thrown from the central bonfire. The larger pile of firewood across from Shona's tent lay scattered, and a shaken squirrel hopped frantically about the logs.
"Idiot witch," Teolig huffed.
He added something about the foolish old crone as he spun about to leave, and ended with,
"You should be with your husband,"
as the tent flap fell closed behind him. Shona found it hard to breathe, and she tried to suppress her gasps so that Aulan would not recognize the utter shock on her face. For Shona had never seen such a thing. She swallowed hard and looked down at Aulan, who was, thankfully, too wrapped up in her own thoughts to notice.
"Perhaps I left the coven too soon,"
Shona thought, but did not say. Indeed, she couldn't find any words to offer at that moment. After a long pause, it was Aulan who broke the silence.
"Another?" she asked. "May I try more magic?"
"No, child,"
Shona answered, and shuddered at the thought.
"No, not now. I think you're quite ready for your trials. Now get some rest, for be sure that you'll be needing your energy in the very near future."
That brought a smile to Aulan's face, and a renewed sparkle in her dark eyes, an expression that showed an understanding of, and clearly a hope for, some magical interaction at the hinted event.
"Aye," Shona silently answered, but she knew that it certainly wasn't the magic that Aulan would hope to see.
18. Into the Mouth of God. The girl skipped so lightly that she seemed to be floating along behind her, Shona thought, though, thankfully, not literally. Given Aulan's power to access the magic of Uskar, that was a disturbing possibility. It would take them several hours to go all the way around to the southeastern slopes of Fiorok's Boer, since they were using no magic to help them navigate the valleys and high bluffs. The witches of the coven, several of them accompanying Shona and Aulan this night, knew the way well, though, and had timed their march so that they would arrive at the entrance to the Crystal Caverns at dusk. As the sun fully set, Aulan alone would enter the caves. Some tribal leaders had come along as well, most particularly Te Orlig, who continued to surprise Shona with his interest in the girl. He looked angry, more so than usual, and kept casting glances at both Shona and Aulan. He was hoping the girl would fail, Shona feared. Not because of the possible fatal consequences that would hold for Aulan, but because it would give Tay Orlig, at long last, the excuse he needed to be rid of Shona. When the trial had been determined earlier in the summer, Shona was fearful of such an outcome, but that had diminished somewhat in the face of Aulan's power bared. The sheer magical strength of the young woman had certainly terrified the teacher, but it also made her a bit more comfortable that this neophyte would succeed at the coming test. Just a bit, though. Other promising young witches had fared ill. She had said nothing to the other women of the coven about that, however. On the day of Aulan's magical display, Shona had claimed credit for the massive levitation field to Meirin and the others, as she had to Te Orlig. She could tell from their glances along this journey, though, that some of the witches had become highly suspicious of that claim. Even at the height of her power, Shona would have been hard-pressed to bring forth a field so large and potent, and several of her fellow witches certainly knew that. She knew, too, that they often gossiped about this young woman, her niece, the daughter of Ilara, wondering of her powers. But Shona decided to neither confirm nor deny their rumors. They would all soon enough realize Aulan's promise. True to their plan, the group arrived at the cave entrance bathed in shadow, just as the lower edge of the sun reached the horizon around the mountain's bend. The air was chill and clear, and the moon would be full tonight, the sky full of stars, not covered by clouds. The conditions were perfect for the test, and Shona felt the tingling magic of the air. Simply from looking at the girl, Shona could tell that Aulan felt it too. Aulan bounced more than walked, and her hands kept running over the bare skin of her arms. The air was cold, of course, but Aulan was not trying to warm herself.
"Stand here," Shona commanded, directing Aulan to a spot just outside the cave entrance beneath a massive crystalline structure full of wedstones.
"What should I—" Aulan started to ask, but Shona silenced her with a harsh tsk. The four men stayed back, looking on keenly, while the witches advanced, surrounding Aulan, encircling her, and joining hands. At the invitation of the Uska Regin, Shona joined the ring as well. The last hints of daylight faded, and Shona and the witches closed their eyes, falling into the trance together, channeling their centers into the inviting crystal, together freeing their spirits and engaging in the far walk. Shona practically felt all her sisters gasp at once as they gazed upon the glowing child. Shona herself was once again taken aback by the clarity and power of Aulan's aura, but she carefully hid her satisfaction. As the one most familiar with Aulan, she was the emotional center of this joint trance, and she guided the others with her willpower back to a calm state. Together, as one, the women of the coven assaulted Aulan's center. She was strong, but joined in course, they were far stronger. They stripped Aulan's defenses and left her reeling.
It took them a great effort, more than usual, but after a short while their task was accomplished.
Shona opened her eyes, the far walk dissipating. In the center of their ring, Aulan knelt, her face a visage of terror. Together, the women moved forward and lifted the girl. They carried her into the entryway of the cavern and dropped her unceremoniously on the ground. Then they stepped out and channeled more of their energy into the crystals, into the quartz itself that formed much of the crystalline threshold of this place. Together, they conjured an image, a wall, so that it appeared that they had sealed the cavern. Aulan would awaken some time later. Shona suspected it would be much sooner than usual, and she would find herself trapped within. She would have to survive the night in the caves, her center stripped down by the coven. It was no small task for an uninitiated woman, and many had failed before. Some of those young women had died in these caves, mouths opened wide in a last unheard scream. Others had been pulled out of the darkness, but fully broken, never again whole. Some had become gibbering fools, others had resumed a more mundane Uskar life. But none who had failed a night in the haunted crystal caves had ever again gone near the magical power of Uskar. Shona turned toward Te Orlig and his fellows.
"Are you satisfied?"
she asked, feigning deference.
"I will be satisfied with your efforts when Aulan exits the cave in the morning,"
Te Orlig answered.
"She will," Shona said, narrowing her eyes and hardening her visage, letting the man know that she was utterly certain of her prediction.
Apparently, Te Orlig recognized that certainty. Whether from the tone of her voice or from the look on her face, she could not be certain. But she was feeling smug, and in this place, before the bared power of Uskar's magic, she was also feeling quite powerful and confident. Back at the encampment, Te Orlig could punish her for even the perception of insolence. But here, so close to the source of her power, surrounded by the women of the coven, Shona believed that she was the one in control. And Te Orlig knew it, too, and it surely did not sit well with him. He scowled and turned away, stalking off to set up his bedroll. The women of the coven would remain awake all night, maintaining the illusion of a sealed cave. But the men, who had no real purpose here, other than to sate their own sense of self-importance, could sleep. Shona rolled her eyes at the man, allowing a fantasy of putting him in the caves, where he would be driven mad, driven to his knees, and driven to his grave. Yes, she would like that. With a guffaw, she turned back to her task. Blackness. The rattled young woman thought she had opened her eyes, but perhaps just blackness. Only gradually did Aulan come to understand that her eyes were open, and it took some time after that for her to even realize her own body again, that she was lying on the warm, very warm, stone. She was covered in sweat, a light clothing clinging to her damp skin.
She felt very tiny, as if the entity of Aulan had been shrunken down to some minuscule amount and left to inhabit a gigantic body over which she had little control.
Slowly, she became aware of her heartbeat, and then the throbbing and buzzing in her head. Beside that heartbeat, her chest ached, and she became aware of her breathing. And that, in turn, made her consciously focus on her breathing, so that she was soon gasping. The tactile feelings gradually returned, as if her life force was flowing back out to her limbs, to her skin. Aulan tried futilely to sort out the puzzle here. She had no memory of the recent past, so she reached back farther, to the journey she had taken this night. Or had it even been this night? How could she know how much time had passed? How could she know anything? Was she even alive? Was she still within her own body? That last troubling thought led her to an inescapable memory, more a nightmare. Except that it was true, she just knew. It was true. They had invaded her. The spirits of the witches, of Shona too, had come into her. They had tugged at her consciousness, at her sensibilities, at her self. They had made her small within her own frame, had pushed and pressed her, driving her deeper within herself. She felt a profound pain in her chest, in her line of life and heart. They had done this to her. Aulan felt violated, horribly so. She wanted to scream, to lash out, to fight back, particularly against Shona. How could Shona have done this to her? They had invaded her, and now left her here, wherever this was. Panic welled in her. She forced one arm out to the side, feeling about, searching for grass or dirt, a pebble, a stair, anything. But there was just the hardness of a smooth stone floor, and it was warm, very warm. She tried to sit up, but just rolled over onto her side. She reached out again, farther, and hit something sharp, like the edge of a waiting spear. She recoiled instinctively, grabbing her wounded hand, and felt the wetness of blood, even feeling the gash itself, and it was a deep one. It should have hurt more than it did, she believed, and then had that thought confirmed, as the pain became sharper, more acute, and Aulin realized that it signaled a more complete return to her physical body, as if her spirit was finally expanding again with the corporeal coil. She tried to sit up once more, and this time did so, shifting a bit to be closer to the sharp object she had struck. She paused there, and tried to collect her wits. She focused on the journey from the encampment, her last real memory, but her thoughts would not coalesce. All she could remember was that she had left the encampment with some others, with some witches and Shona, at least. She shuddered as their spiritual intrusion came clear once more. But this time, she fought against her instinctive revulsion and tried to see the violation of her most core being in a different light, like when Shona had done it to her back in the tent. Had the coven been trying to teach her something? She shook her head. The only lesson she could gather was one of inferiority, for they had spiritually pounded her down, had toyed with her. Aulin swallowed hard and took a deep and cleansing breath. She reached out into the darkness again, this time more carefully. Her hand brushed the sharp point, and she tapped her way past it and along a widening shaft to a wall. She shifted and moved her fingers carefully. Yes, it was a wall covered with blades of some sort. She looked the other way, then ahead and up and back. Just blackness, utter blackness. Aulin wasn't particularly afraid of the dark. She loved being out in the night on Firoxbuer, under the stars, or even in the blackness of a cloudy, moonless night. But this was different. This was a darkness so profound that it pressed in on her. And then she realized that she was blind. She recoiled again, and let out a scream that sounded more like a broken gasp. In her movement, she climbed to her feet and stumbled, pointedly not to the right and the blade-covered wall. No, she went the other way, trying to move cautiously, but overbalancing, and once again bumping her reaching hand into something sharp. Another bladed wall. What hell was this? Aulin spun and tumbled back to the hard floor. The heat pressed in around her. Why was it so hot? She felt her sweat all about her body, her light clothing grabbing at her. She sobbed and felt the heat in her chest, along with the pain. Panic again welled up in her, like black wings rising from the floor to engulf her. They had blinded her. They had taken her sight and thrown her into a pit of blades, into the maw of a monster, she thought, sharp teeth ready to clamp down upon her and tear her apart. Young Aulin wept, expecting pain, expecting death. Shona sat outside the cave with a pair of witches. Even though she was no longer of the 13, she was still Pusthareh, still a member of that exclusive club of women who had learned to access the magical powers of Uskar. All three of the women were spiritually joined through a crystal bar that each held with one hand. Thick with wedstones, this long crystal allowed the three to easily combine their focus and powers on two other crystals, one flecked with perfectly clear quartz, the other heavy with a singular stone, green and yellow, and resembling the eye of a cat. With the quartz crystal, the witches could cast their sight into the distance, and with the other, the cat's eye, they could see through the darkness. So it was now, the trio looking in on Aulin as she began to fumble about the crystal cavern,
Chona winced when the young woman stabbed herself on the wall, and those outside heard the distant scream of pain and fear. Alan seemed lost and despondent, and in that moment, desperate to the point where Shona thought she might hurt herself so badly that she would end any chance she had to become a member of the coven. The older witch winced. Aulan's failure would be her failure, and her failure would likely facilitate the end of her life. Her concern went beyond that, though. To her surprise, she found that it extended to Aulan. The blood ties didn't really matter to Shona. And certainly she had taught many others before Aulan, and had enjoyed teaching most of those others much more than her dealings with this impertinent whelp. But still, the promise of this one, of Alara's child, had excited Shona. Aulan was more akin to her sister than in just her appearance. Alara had been a willful one, often acting beyond custom and without permission, as in the night she had tried to help Fionnla, her husband, in his futile hunt for the demon Fossa. Perhaps that was why Shona had been so tough and so judgmental with Aulan. She feared that the girl's willful nature would bring her only grief. Maybe it was better for Aulan to fail here in the Crystal Cave. She might die, but she might also come to a mundane future. One where she would only need to worry about being Breath's wife and the bearer of his children, and not ever tapping into the potential danger of the magic crystals. That might be the best outcome, Shona thought, as she watched the poor girl stumble about in the blackness. There were far worse fates. But in her heart, Shona reached her left hand into the small pouch tied at her waist, feeling the crystals she kept within. She knew them so well that she could distinguish them by blind touch. She felt her personal wordstone. If she let go of the joining rod, she could walk free of her body and go to the girl, whisper to her spiritually, to encourage her, to guide her. She brought her hand back out, holding nothing, and swallowed hard, reminding herself that she was joined with two other witches, women who had perhaps read her thoughts. Shona let go of the distant sight for just a moment to regard the others and gauge their reactions. That brought her some solace. These were good women, loyal to the coven, loyal and respectful to the former witches. Just a few years previous, she had trained the younger, Conabra, who was just a decade older than Aulan. The other woman, Soaka, was much older, almost Shona's age, and they had danced about the crystal manifestation of Uskar side by side for many years. What might these two do if she went to Aulan? Conabra hoped Aulan would succeed, Shona was sure. But what of Soaka? Might she see Aulan as a threat, or as a suitable replacement for her own place in the coven's dance? Shona mulled it over for just a few moments, before realizing that she was far afield here, and in dangerous straits. These two women, like Shona, had survived the Modgarad, without any help. Indeed, Shona had been in this same spot, holding this same crystal bar, when Conabra had walked through the Maw of Uskar. And in that time, Conabra had been more distraught, more befuddled, more desperate than Aulan was now. Why hadn't Shona felt any compulsion to fly free of her corporeal form to help Conabra? The old witch scolded herself silently and dismissed her reckless plan. She grasped the crystal bar more tightly and started to fall back into the trance. But out of the corner of her eye she caught Te Orlig, standing in the shadows of a rocky overhang, staring at her, smiling. She felt naked under his gaze. He could not know that which was in her heart, she told herself, but in meeting his stare, she did not know if she believed that. Shona suddenly found it hard to breathe. He wanted Aulan to fail, she believed,
so that he could demand Shona's death for the girl's tragic failure. Hope flowed from Shona in that dark, dark moment. She felt a hand on her own and spun about to regard Conobra. The young woman offered a smile and a nod toward the common crystal bar, a reminder of Aulin, Shona understood. With her hand, Conobra pressed Shona's hand tighter about the crystal bar, inviting her to look in on her newest student once more.
Te Orlig stared at the three women, huddled before the illusionary wall sealing the crystal cave. He quietly slipped his hand into the nondescript pouch sewn into his pants beneath his belt, the tiny compartment that held his secret. He knew what they were doing. While other witches maintained the illusion, these three were watching over Aulin, trying to make sure she didn't die within the caves, as others had. The warrior grinned wickedly. He knew he could interrupt their magical connection to the girl, whatever it might be. He could enact the power of the stone he found himself rolling between his fingers, send that anti-magic energy out to the trio.
Perhaps they would get around his powers in time, but the looks he anticipated seeing upon their faces, terror and confusion, made it almost worth the effort.
He caught the oldest of the trio, Shona, staring back at him, and narrowed his eyes. She thought it was personal between them, Teolig knew. She thought that he hated her because of the fool Fionnla and her sister Alara. Perhaps that was part of it, but what Teolig hated more was the mere existence of the Pwethare, former witches. They should not have access to the magic of Uskar any longer, Teolig believed, and intended to make formal when he at last gained enough power. The formal 13 of the coven were tightly bound by their rules and kept busy with important tasks, but these others, like Shona, they were impertinent women who had forgotten their place in the tribe. Even the other women, those who would never serve in the coven, talked lightly about the former witches, laughing about them being cheeky or brazen. But no, Te Orlig understood. They were simply unruly hags causing mischief and threatening the order that had sustained Uskar for generations. If he knew for certain that interrupting the three now would cause more than a little grief, and would in fact lead to Shona's death, then it might well be worth the risk of revealing his unique stone. But no, the price was too high. Because the girl in the cave intrigued Teolig, with her curves, and her black hair, and dark eyes. Her small but strong frame that so completely resembled her mother's. The powerful man had to take a steadying breath at the memory of Alara. No, he didn't want Aulin to fail in this trial, even if it meant that he would pass on the chance to dispose of Shona. If she failed, Aulin would never gain access to the coven, and if she was not among the powerful witches of Uskar, then she would not ever be a suitable wife. To Te Orlig. He knew. He knew that it was Aulin and not Shona who had lifted the tent flaps, the logs, the weapons, the casks. Her affinity to Uskar was strong, her power almost frightening. When he finally arrived at the point of power where he could select his wife from any woman in the tribe, even ones already married, if he so chose, this one, this Aulin, this daughter of strangely powerful Alara, would top that list. But not if Aulin failed here, and so was placed on a path of mundane servitude. Indeed, if Aulin was not bound for a place in the coven, she would be given to Breyth as early as the next spring. He thought of her. He pictured her in his mind. He remembered Alara. And knew what Aulin would become. Yes, he would have her one day. One day soon.
Listen to your breath,
Owlin whispered. She silently counted to four as she breathed in, then forced herself to slow her exhale to the same four count, consciously slowing her breathing, consciously focusing on her breathing. She lay down flat on her back and pressed her legs against the stone. Then she started to call to her body, bit by bit. She flexed her toes widely, tightening the muscles in her legs as well. Then she let go, fully, muscles relaxing, legs relaxing, feet dropping out. She had to connect her mind to her body here, had to find her center and her calm. She brought her fingertips to her thighs, feeling the flesh of her legs. She sent her thoughts through her fingers, a light touch coaxing the legs to relax more deeply. She walked her hands up slowly, one to her belly, one to the plexus between her ribs, then to her heart, the throat, the forehead, and from there she pressed the heels of her hands into her eyes. The darkness was no less complete when she brought her arms down beside her, and there she lay, feeling her body, counting her breath. She heard Shona's voice in her head, demanding that she find her center, and by that she meant that place near Owlin's heart, the place where she found the music of Uskar and the magic of the crystals. Hardly even aware of the movement, Owlin sat up. She crossed her legs and rested the backs of her hands on her knees. She didn't fidget now. She didn't flick at her fingernails, as she so often had when practicing these techniques with Shona. That had been play, so Owlin had thought. This was survival. 1, 2, 3, she said under her breath, breathing in. Become aware of your toes. She heard Shona's voice echoing from her memory. Do not move them. Simply become aware of them. You have toes. Owlin had always laughed at that ridiculous statement, but only internally, after taking a whipping for doing so aloud. But of course she had toes. She had never before truly seen the purpose of such an exercise. Right now, though, facing such dire consequences, Owlin found it oddly remarkable that she did indeed have toes, 5 of them on each of her feet.
1, 2, 3,
she said as she exhaled.
Become aware of your feet,
Shona's voice said through her memories, and Owlin obeyed.
And of the ankles above them, and the lower leg above that.
Owlin consciously moved her thoughts up her legs, stopping to focus on each bit, finding herself marveling at her own body.
1, 2, 3,
she mentally counted as she inhaled. Slowly, with no rush or sense of urgency at all, Owlin let her consciousness move through her body, up to her knees, her thighs, her pelvis, her gut, all the while she counted and she breathed. Slowly, deliberately, she felt her muscles, relaxed but strong, keeping her stable in this sitting position. She felt her blood coursing through her veins hotly. She felt herself, her body, her soul.
1, 2, 3, focus on the flow of your breath, moving easily past your heart, and become aware of your very center.
Owlin's eyes snapped open. In a hypersensitive state of meditation, she felt the movement. She still couldn't see, though, and remained certain that she had been blinded by the spiritual assault of the witches. Now, though, it didn't matter, for another scent had awakened, one that had tickled her previously, teased her from afar, just out of reach. But for the first time, she was truly aware of it, deeply and completely aware of it. She felt it vibrating, that hollow spot in her chest. And, frighteningly, she felt the world vibrating with it,
as if she held some mystical connection to all about her. No, not the world, she realized. The floor and the walls and the ceiling. This place, this cavern. Yes, she only then remembered.